to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
Expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. Or if you're listening to this on an audio file or later on, you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week, e-bikes. Yeah, I know, we talk about e-bikes a lot on this show. The problem with e-bikes, the super fast illegal one. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that, and we're going to see what we can pull out of that for information, because everyone's talking about e-bikes right now. It's just becoming a really big thing. It's an enormous change to our basically our transportation system, because people are finding that e-bikes work really, really well for most people, which is really cool. Anyway, we will get into that. And then I have the other rant of the week. People are complaining about the big highway project up in Storrs. It's Route 275 South Eagleville Road. It goes through the south part of the campus and right by the town hall and the community center. And what they're doing is they're putting raised intersections, well, raised mid-block crossings, and they're trying to reduce vehicle traffic speeds and improve visibility of pedestrians and encourage drivers to yield to pedestrians at the crosswalks, and also to make it easier for cyclists as they're riding through on that road. It's a very busy road. It's way too fast. And so this is going on. And everyone asks me, what is going on out there? Why are they doing that? Why are they making such a mess? Well, it's not a mess. It's actually a really positive thing, and it is happening with us right now. And it all comes into the same thing, and that is slowing down to save lives, the urgency of traffic calming. And I'm going to talk more about that in the show. By the way, that project is currently, they are putting the final pavement down this week, so it looks like that project will be real close to done, which is exciting. Can't wait to ride my bike on it because, you know, it's kind of part of the whole deal. We want to be able to test it out and see how it works. Plus, it's brand new pavement, and you can never, ever, ever thank the pavement gods enough for putting down nice, fresh pavement, especially if you're on a bicycle. So anyway, the other thing I have in in Ron's Rant of the Week, we got lots of rants. We always have lots of rants. How Trump's latest multimodal clawbacks are different and how they could devastate communities. Yeah, our friend Kia Wilson over the Streets blog. She has a great little article here about the latest attack on multimodal transportation, and it's more brazen and destructive than ever before. And the Trump administration is no longer hiding its disdain for walking and biking projects. What? Come on, man. Get it together. You know, if you weren't so old and falling apart so badly, maybe you would ride a bike and you would start to understand our side of the world here. But I'm not going to push it. You're close to dead anyway, by the looks of things. So it doesn't look real good. Your health doesn't look good. You don't look like you're moving well. There's a whole bunch of things that are going on there. But anyway, maybe if you'd ridden a bike, you would be in better shape right now. There's an idea. On a positive side, states have more power than they think to find sustainable transportation as the Trump administration claws back for money for sustainable modes. States have a big opportunity to fill the gap. We're going to talk more about that. Also, a Streets blog article. And embracing the e-bike boom. How China is leading on regulations and infrastructure. China's making big strides to regulate and support slow speed electric micro-mobility, and the U.S. should take a page from their book. We'll talk a little bit about that today, too. And on down here on the positive side, the problem with e-bikes, the super fast illegal ones. Well, we're going to get into that. New Yorkers are riding illegal vehicles marketed as e-bikes with little to no consequences, and it's a safety problem. We have the same thing right here in downtown stores. So yeah, it happens all around. But we'll talk about that more in the show. The Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. What are SMART goals? S-M-A-R-T stands for Specific, Measurable, Achievable, Relevant, and Time-Bound. All right, so we're gonna discuss this today and see exactly how this all works out. So this comes from Pez Cycling News, another great cycling site, and we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, people riding bikes, getting in shape, and how to stay there and what it is. And we're looking at the cycling season winding down. It's a perfect time to reflect your progress and your plan for next year ahead. And I am doing that right now because I had some major surgery this year, and I am pretty much back to ground zero as far as my own personal fitness goes. So this will be an interesting little piece to explore because I got to start from the bottom and work up. I'll tell you what, when I was a younger man, and we can all say this over the years, but anyway, when I was a younger man, it was so much easier to snap back after, you know, sitting on your butt for weeks on end. Let's call it no more than, I don't think I ever sat still in the winter for more than a month at the very, very most. So we're talking 4 weeks. With this neck surgery that I had, I have been off my bike really for 3 months or more. So this is it's a whole new world. Now, when I was 20 years old, you know, you just go out, suck it up, do the hard work, get yourself back and going again, and you could really snap back fairly quickly. But I'm not 20 years old anymore. Nah, I'm not. I even rode myself into fitness when I rode my bike across the country when I was 20 years old. I had fitness, but I didn't have the level of fitness I had by the time I was done after traveling at about 85 miles a day. And, you know, the first couple of weeks of that trip were kind of rough, but it got better. It got better with time. And that's the thing. Different scenario. Okay, so we're going to take that 20, we're going to add 50 years onto it. So you add 50 years onto it, and what do you have? You have Pedalin Ron with 39 years worth of experience and 39 years old with 31 years worth of experience. Yeah, do the math, I'm 70. So I'm not young anymore. So this snapping back thing, just, it doesn't happen. And I'm back on the bike again. I'm back on the indoor cycle again. I had a nice workout this morning. I definitely put some effort out. I got some hard cardiovascular work in. I saw 80% for a while. I'm getting there. But my legs are weak and I'm struggling and it's going to take some time. Plus, I've got to change my position on my bike because my neck doesn't bend the same way as it used to. So there's all sorts of complications that have arisen, including my age, which is going to be somewhat restrictive, but I'm going to get there. I'm definitely going to get there. And I have a plan, and we're going to talk a little bit about the SMART goal setting framework here today and see if it applies to what I'm trying to do. So, cycling is definitely a pastime and a hobby for me, but it is also a thing that I do for transportation because I like to use my bike for transportation. I obviously like to use it for fitness because it has literally saved my life more than once along the way. First with a heart issue that was brought out because I was having difficulty cycling. Second, with this neck issue that I developed here that I've been working on now to recover from, which was also brought up because of a cycling communication. So my bicycle has been my great savior, and so that's why I need to continue to keep my fitness level at a really high standard. And as my surgeon said when he worked on my heart, he said that my heart was he said it was magnificent. And what he said was he observed there was so much collateral arterial growth around my heart that I actually built a safety net around my heart, and that was just from years of cycling. That's it. Well, maybe there's a little running in there. Maybe there's a little cross-country skiing in there. Maybe there's some snowshoeing in there. Maybe some ice skating. You know, there's other things that I do. But basically, I kept my cardiovascular fitness up to a level where my body is able to communicate with me when things are starting to go wrong much sooner than it would have if I was, you know, not in such great shape. Or maybe it would have happened sooner if I wasn't in such good shape. It's hard to really say. But anyway, the idea here is I need to get myself back in shape. So let's talk about SMART. S-M-A-R-T stands for specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. This framework provides a structured approach to setting goal setting, increasing your chances of success. So I'm going to break down each component of the SMART goal to understand how it can be applied to cycling. So we'll start with specific. Your goal should be clear and well-defined instead of a vague goal like getting better at cycling. That's not what we want to do. We consider something specific like increase my FTP, my fitness threshold, by, let's say, 15 watts. Ride a total of 10,000 kilometers next year. Probably not. Or increase my average speed on my regular 30-kilometer route. You can take a look at it like that too. So, but you have to have some sort of a goal set up. My goal would be to be able to get out and ride my bicycle for, I want to go out and ride comfortably for 3 hours. If I can go out and do a 3-hour ride and get done with it and obviously be tired afterwards, but feel like I accomplished something and feel like I was okay on the hills, that I wasn't getting beat up on my bike, then I'm in a really, really good place. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the ability to ride my bike to the community center, teach my fitness class, and ride home. It's going to be about 2 hours worth of work by the time I'm done. And I want to be able to do that comfortably. So those are the things I'm actually looking for. So measurable. There should be an objective way to track your progress. With a variety of training platforms available, you can find a number of ways to track your progress towards your goals, such as time, distance, power, speed, or heart rate. Achievable. Okay. Arguably, one of the most difficult challenges of the goal setting is to set up goals that are realistic. Realistic, very important. Within our current capabilities, since it requires being honest with ourselves. Although pushing boundaries should be encouraged, setting unattainable goals can lead to frustration. After all, as much as, you know, I would love to have a much higher threshold power, it's still going to be difficult to achieve, and I have to develop my fitness threshold first and figure out where I'm going from there. So anyway, relevant part of this is all part of our SMART, the R of the SMART. The relevant, ensure your goal aligns with your cycling aspirations and fits into a broader training plan. It should contribute to your overall cycling journey rather than just being a random and irrelevant target. You want to ride a hilly Gran Fondo in 2024? 2024. This was an old article. Let's say 2026. Then a relevant goal might be completing a single ride with, let's say, 3,000 feet of elevation gain, while an irrelevant goal might be hitting a peak sprint at certain amount of power. It certainly isn't going to be from this article, which is 1,200 watts. I've never seen it in my life. I am a low wattage man. I am very thin, and my wattage output tends to be when I'm putting out in my 80% range right now, my wattage is usually in the low 200s. So that's fairly common. Would I like to see that increase? Of course I would. It would be really helpful. It would be great on the hills. It would make a big, big difference for accelerating, that sort of thing. So the last piece of it is time bound. Set a firm target date or a time frame for achieving your goals. Having a deadline helps keep It helps create a sense of urgency and commitment. These can be a goal for the year, further broken down into quarterly or monthly targets. So I'm going to say that I will probably be looking for things like I've got a gravel ride that I help out with in the spring, or it's kind of like late March. So it's something that it comes up quickly, and I would like to be in good enough shape this year to be able to do that. I also have another goal, whereas I wish to ride in the Best Buddies ride again this next year in 2026, so that I can put my friend Gabe on the back and we can go and accomplish the ride on my tandem. That's a huge goal, and I had to miss that this year, but I had to miss most of my cycling this summer just because of the fact that I had such a severe problem with my neck. I was actually encouraged not to ride the bike outdoors because they didn't want me falling off my bike, because if Ron had fallen off his bike, it would have been the end of Ron. So we certainly paid attention to that level of advice. And so I stayed off the bike. And that means I stayed off. Once I was diagnosed with this, I was no longer riding outdoors. And outdoors is way different than indoors. And so that is something that I really miss a lot, because outdoors is, it's just harder. It's going to be harder. We have hills. We have real hills here. If you ride in northeastern Connecticut, where I ride, you average somewhere around 65 feet per mile. So that's a lot of hills, and that will challenge you. It also gets you in great shape when you're doing it. But you need to get out, and you need to get strong and do that. I'm probably going to spend a lot of time in the gym this winter, and not just on an indoor cycle working on the cardiovascular end of things, but also spending time in the weight room, because my overall strength has gone to nothing as far as what I'm used to. So I need to regain that overall strength and get myself back to the point where I can feel strong again and able to be able to put out hard efforts when I need to put out hard efforts. So you gotta ensure your achievability and cycling goals, and you gotta set time-bound cycling goals. So when I was racing my bike, we used to try to get X number of miles in by the first training race, and of course I'm not racing my bike. I'm not planning on racing my bike, but I am planning on certain goals to get myself up to my first, we'll call it event, which would probably be that gravel ride in late March. So that's kind of what I'm looking at, and that is a very achievable and reachable goal. So because it's quite a ways away from here right now, from where I am right now, so I've got a lot of time to get there, but I have to set up checkpoints and points of which I can you know, take a look at my overall fitness at this point in time and see if I'm where I want to be at that time, or if I'm before, behind it, or in front of it. And these are things you just have to evaluate. I've trained a number of people over the years, and I've trained myself over the years, and this is the direction I have to look at now. And I'm looking at starting all over again, really, because that's kind of where I'm at, unfortunately. And not super happy with that, but I'm real happy to be alive, and I'm real happy that I'm able to walk and stand up and be vertical instead of just horizontal the whole time, which was where I was headed. So I got to say, you know, that it definitely, I'll get there. So what I want you to do as a listener to Bicycle Talk is I want you to sit down as the weather starts to deteriorate and you start getting, we all do it, if you live in the cold zone, you get a little depressed in the wintertime because things start falling apart and you start looking at all that work you did all summer long, that great fitness that you have. And even if your fitness is just related on, you know, traveling back and forth to work on your bike or, you know, running errands or whatever, it's still something that you got pretty good at if you spent all summer doing it. And then as the winter comes in and you cannot spend quite as much time outdoors, it becomes a huge challenge and a disappointment to a certain extent, because you do lose the fitness over the winter. Now you can do other things. You can, if you have the winter atmosphere to do it, if you have the ability to run, you can do that. But running can also be a big test on the body. If you have the ability to do any other type of sport in the wintertime, maybe it's swimming in a pool, maybe it's, you know, just working out at the gym, you can still sustain a fair amount of your fitness, but it's never the same as riding your bike outside. And I will always say that. So these are the things that I want you to look at. This is Ron's tips of the week. I want you to take a look at where you are and where you want to be next spring. So that's where it is. I'm going to move on to the next part of my show, and we're going to talk more about these crazy e-bikes and everything else that's going on. I'm going to start right now with this is a Streets blog piece that states have more power than they think to fund sustainable transportation. So there's a lot going on right now, a whole lot going on. Transportation was at its highest point ever that I have ever seen in the last administration. There was a lot of focus on it. There was a lot of focus on infrastructure. There was a lot of grant money out there. There was just a ton of things going on that were making transportation move forward in the direction that was very positive for people on bicycles, not to mention people who are pedestrians, anybody who is transporting themselves in a different way than a motorized vehicle. So unless, of course, it was a bus or a train, which is another very sustainable way to transport yourself. But unfortunately, there have been a huge amount of pullbacks. The Project 2025 is not good for those of us who are trying to transport ourselves in a more intelligent way. So it's really, really difficult. And so the current administration has done its best to undermine state authority from clawing back on grants. They've revoked California's Clean Air Act waivers. And state leaders can still make progress on clean transportation, but, you know, it's hard. And I know my state of Connecticut, they're really trying to stay ahead of things. We have a huge project that was about 80% finished in conjunction with the state of Rhode Island, which was a clean energy project. And they were building these enormous windmills out in Long Island Sound, and they're 80% done, and then the plug got pulled on it. So, you know, 20% more doesn't seem like that much, but it's a lot of money. And when that money goes away, it's much harder to complete the project. Now, this also goes for infrastructures of bike lanes and, you know, protected bike lanes and all that too. So it's all connected. So it's going to be really, really challenging to be able to finish what was a real, real positive start. And, you know, that's just basically what we're going to have to do. So historically, you know, both parties have supported a state's right to decide how to use federal transportation funds. But today, as the current administration looks to consolidate power and undermine states, it's not clear what the next surface transportation reauthorization will hold. States must act quickly and decisively to maximize the impact of available funds. I know Connecticut is working really, really hard to get this wind project done, even though the funds have been pulled. So what transportation funding sources can states draw from? Transportation funding is one of the biggest chunks of money that states receive from the federal government. The National Highway Performance Program alone has contract authority for $30 billion annually from 2022 to 2026. And the U.S. Department of Transportation disperses federal dollars primarily as formula funds, which are allocated to state and local governments based on a blanket formula that takes into account factors like population size, number of bridges, and maintenance needs. In this October, we're likely to see new criteria for the fiscal year 2026 federal formula dollars that will include Sean Duffy's priorities of high marriage rates and high birth rates over traditional criteria like population and projected growth. So states can choose to flex fund. Flex funding allows states and metropolitan planning organizations to reallocate federal transportation funds away from their original purpose, like highways, to other initiatives like transit, bicycling, and pedestrian infrastructure. This can be done through transfers from one highway program to another or to the Federal Transit Administration. The most high-profile recent example of a state exercising authority to move funds to the FTA is when Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro flexed $153 million to pay for transit in 2024. The money carrier came from highway projects that had not been started, where federal dollars were obligated but not actually programmed. While the state had money sitting on the books for many years, public transit was struggling to make the numbers add up. Two decades earlier, Pennsylvania Governor Randell had similarly flexed highway money to support transit under parallel circumstances. So flex funding is a way to go. It's highly discretionary. There is no upper limit on flex funding. And there is the movement of other kinds of federal dollars. However, flex funding requires significant engagement with the federal government at the district and headquarter levels through both the Federal Transit Administration and the Federal Highway Administration. Given the antagonistic relationship between the U.S. Department of Transportation and states with Democratic governors under Secretary Duffy's leadership, the strategy is not feasible today, but other opportunities will remain. So we're going to still see states cleverly being able to figure out ways to pull funding for projects, but there's another lower lift route for states to move federal monies toward low carbon transportation options like electric vehicles, transit, walking, and cycling. States can transfer money across the federal aid highway programs that administer the that are administered by the Federal Highway Administration. Nationwide state budgets are impacted by federal funding freezes, shutdowns, and program cuts, but transfer funding provides an alternative source of federal funding that states can draw from to cut transportation pollution and invest in a clean transportation infrastructure. States have used this authority before, generally to move money away from sustainable transportation projects. In 2022, the Transportation Research Board published a retrospective analysis on the use of funds from the previous two surface transportation reauthorizations. From fiscal years 2013 to 2020, states flexed $13.3 billion from highway to transit projects. The major leaders in flex funding have been New Jersey, flexing 15%, California, 10%, Maryland, 9%, and closely followed by Oregon, Vermont, and New York. The states that most likely to flex money to transit systematically are part of a legacy group of states that have poor air quality and need to meet air quality improvement performance measures. So states also already transfer on the average 8.7% of dollars between highway trust fund programs. So since the National Highway Performance Program is the biggest program, most of the dollars came out of highway funding. There's light at the end of this tunnel. It's just going to have to be a clever way of manipulating funds around so that we get what we need to be able to put these things together. The project that we have up here in Storrs, which I will talk about in a little bit, about the traffic calming project, that is all money that came from years past. So we're not stuck yet. But, you know, it's going to have to take some clever rearranging to make it happen. There's three federal programs that can receive transfer funding: the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Program, and the Transportation Alternative Program. So, and that the one that is most important to me as being the guy at Bicycle Talk, pedaling around at Bicycle Talk, is the Transportation Alternatives Program, which is set aside from the others that, and it can fund pedestrian and bicycle facilities. So it's not all grim, all right? I like to be as optimistic as I possibly can. This has been a very, very interesting and difficult time that we are in right now. But there are alternative programs out there for states interested in building out electric vehicle infrastructure, transferring National Highway Performance Program dollars into Surface Transportation Block Grant might be the simplest way forward. For states building out sidewalks, protected bike lanes, long-distance commuter bike spines, transportation alternatives would be an appropriate avenue. And for the states looking to move money into transit, transferability authority presents many opportunities to reallocate highway dollars to both capital and planning projects. So put on your thinking caps, folks. Figure out how to do this. And I'm going to say it loud and clear. Get out in front of your town fathers and talk to them, fathers and mothers, and talk to them about what you want to see in your community. This is really important. By the way, I am the local registrar of voters here in Mansfield, one of two of us. We have a Democrat and we have a Republican. You can probably only guess where I'm at. But anyway, doesn't matter. I have to stay apolitical in my position. And we are now running early voting here in Connecticut for 14 days. I was given the morning off by my deputy registrar, which has been very, very kind of her and helpful, because I have some time to produce a show this week, which is cool. But anyway, this is a local election. It is basically the one that probably is the most important election out there for you in your community. This is your municipal election time. There is an election every single year. There is a vote every single year. Most people think that it's only every 4 years, but no, there's lots going on. So it's right now, we are running our municipal election, and that's super important to who sits on our town council, who sits on our planning and zoning board, and who sits on all sorts of things. Our education board, all these things are all voted on right now. So please get out and vote. Please, please. That's my pleas to you. Wherever you are, whatever part of the country you are listening to this podcast from, please get out and vote. And now that we have early voting in many of the states, there is just really no excuse. So just do it. Do your research. Take your time. Find out who you think will work best for you and your needs in your community and go vote. Please, please just vote. So there's lots of ways that things can be done. There are states like Pennsylvania and California, and they could use that tool right away to transfer the funds over. There's just so much you can do. And this is an urgent opportunity for the states. Moving funding from highways to sustainable transportation projects is a win-win transportation for transportation affordability, transportation choice, and decarbonization. Transportation is the single highest polluting sector in the United States, contributing to 28% of our national emissions. Highways, especially new highway projects and lane expansions, mean more cars on the road. We don't need more cars on the road. We need more bikes on the road. It's bicycle talk. That's why you're listening to this show, right? Oh, I hope so. Anyway, that's it. I'm going to leave it alone now. I'm going to move on to the next piece on my show here. But let's talk a little bit about the e-bike boom. Okay, and this is a thing, and it's happening. And, you know, it is just simply fascinating watching how fast this whole e-bike thing has grown. And it's amazing to me at the evolution of the technology and how, prices are actually, even though they are, this mostly is an imported item, prices are coming down. There's better technology out there. There's way better battery life out there. There's a lot of things going on. So let's look at how China is leading on regulations and infrastructure here. This article was originally published by the Vision Zero Cities Journal and released as part of a Transportation Alternative 2025 Vision Zero Cities Conference, and that will be taking place October 28th through the 30th, which is today, yes, and in New York City. As cities worldwide face challenges in promoting cycling and electrification to tackle congestion and climate change, China is already leading the way in integrating e-bikes into urban mobility through robust regulations and extensive infrastructure. With over 420 million bikes across the country, cities like Shanghai boasting an e-bike for every two residents. Yeah, the sheer prevalence of e-bikes in China showcases the scale of this transformation. China's e-bike revolution traces back to the 1980s when many cities banned two-wheeled motorcycles due to noise and safety issues. Manufacturers responded by electrifying pedal bikes, creating them and crafting them to resemble mopeds to meet riders' demand for the ability to carry goods and transport multiple people. Therefore, e-bikes in China often resemble mopeds rather than electric-assisted pedal bikes, which are more common in the Western countries. According to China's national standard, e-bikes are defined as two-wheeled vehicles with electric drive and or electric-assisted function, powered by onboard batteries. The broad definition encompasses both throttle-driven models, which dominate the market, and pedal-assisted ones. On the other hand, electric mopeds and motorcycles also exist in China. They can be heavier with larger motors and higher battery voltages and are classified as motor vehicles requiring licensing and registration. Same here, by the way, folks. Same thing. So anyway, you if you go online and take a look, you can see lots of people that are traveling around on these vehicles, and guess what? You can put, you know, 8 or 10 of these vehicles in the same space as a car or a truck, transporting way more people than you can in a car or a truck. So and doing it without pollution and without damaging the infrastructure. I talk about the damage to the infrastructure a lot on this show, because we have produced so many extremely large and heavy vehicles that people are transporting themselves around in, and we're not taking into effect that they're heavy enough to do damage to the roads. So therefore, we're going to have to repair the roads more often. Whereas the bicycle or the e-bike is definitely not that. The initial standard limited e-bikes is a weight of like 88 pounds, a top speed of 12 miles per hour, and a power motor under 240 watts in China. This is in China. And now they've got a newer version, and they've got vehicles that have updated up to 121 pounds in weight and a top speed of 16 miles per hour and a motor output of 400 watts. So things are changing very, very rapidly in China, but they're, you know, this is how they're transporting themselves. We need to like take a good look at this. This is not a bad idea. Americans, I'll make a general statement here. Generally, Americans are of the lazy sect, and we tend to not want to work so hard to transport ourselves. Very unfortunate, because eventually that becomes an issue with your health in the future. But then again, it's still better than putting yourself in that dad blasted car that is, you know, causing us more problems than it is doing good. So China's way ahead of the game. And like I said, if you look at the pictures that you can see from around the world, and you see how many people are riding on these vehicles that are definitely more looking like a bicycle than they are looking like a car, it's impressive. It's very, very, very impressive. And they've got charging stations and all sorts of great things built into their infrastructure. This is where we have to go, folks. This is how it works. I'm going to run out of time here. I can see it happening. I was wondering what I was going to talk about today, and now I'm running out of time. So let's go on to the next little piece here. I'm going to, the problem with e-bikes, the super fast illegal ones. Okay, so here we are. This is a... This is the problem, and it's a problem that we have talked about a lot on this show. Those bikes that are super fast, and New York has got a whole bunch of these, and they're having a huge problem with it, and they're marketed as e-bikes, but they are not e-bikes. They're illegal. They're legal if you are registering them and if you are, basically insuring them and you know, doing the proper thing, even proper licensing, like a motorcycle license for some of these things, because they're so darn fast. And it's illegal to operate an e-bike that can exceed 25 miles per hour in New York City. But it doesn't stop online retailers from selling illegal e-bikes, nor does it stop New Yorkers from buying these vehicles and riding them in the city's bike lanes at high speed. Oh, stay out of the bike lanes if you're going to go that fast. Anyway, at its worst, like a horrific fatal crash on Flushing Avenue earlier this month, pedestrians and cyclists are injured or killed, setting aside that car drivers cause virtually all the injuries and deaths on our streets. Every time there is a rare crash involving an illegal e-bike, naysayers capitalize on conflating them with safe, legal e-bikes to further the anti-bike agenda. Mayor Adams has added to the confusion, launching a criminal crackdown on legal e-bikes that has ensnarled all kinds of cyclists. Experts have argued that the Trump-friendly administration has used the notion of e-bike chaos to justify a crackdown and allow the New York Police Department to target the mostly immigrant delivery workforce. But the main concern and confusion right now comes from vehicles that look like bikes, but are operated like mopeds and can reach motorcycle speeds. So these bikes, you know, we're talking about, I mean, I've seen some of them that will go up to 70 miles an hour, which is absolute insanity on a base bicycle, because bicycles aren't made to travel that fast. They're not ready to handle well at that speed. It's a motorcycle at that point. So it really, you know, you really have to reconsider what you're dealing with here when you're going in that level. So we've talked often on the show about class 1, class 2, and class 3 e-bikes. And the class 3 ones are the ones that can go up to 25 miles per hour. They're only legal in New York City through a pending city council bill that would eliminate them, and a bill that transportation alternative that called is being put forward on transportation alternatives. None of these bikes have motors exceeding 750 watts. I could go online right now and buy a motor that's 1,000 watts. I can also buy one that's 750 watts, and you can configure your own unit if you want to. It's, you know, there's very, very few restrictions here. There's really it's going to be very difficult to enforce this, but these bikes can definitely hit, you know, you take a look at certain models, they can hit a top speed of 35 miles per hour, which is very, very fast. And there's a Segway-made device that connects an app where the rider can switch between modes seamlessly. I mean, it's insane where the technology is going. And with the technology, we generally, instead of, this is the thing that maddens me most, is instead of using the technology to give us a more sustainable and longer ride before charging the battery, we're always looking for speed, 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 speed. Gotta go fast. You don't have to go fast. So there are brands out there, one of them here, it's called Onx. It sells a 155-pound bike that basically will have a 65-mile-an-hour limit. Can you believe this? This is an e-bike. This is a problem, a huge problem. And they're starting to show up everywhere. I've seen a couple of these around campus. I know they exist. And, you know, it's going to be the biggest problem. It's going to be very, very, very hard to enforce them. And that's where the real issue is here. So enforcement against the sale and use of illegal motorized scooters, that's going to be, I mean, how do you do it? Online, get shipped to your house, get shipped to your apartment. There you go. You got it. There's no way to stop that from happening unless there's some sort of restriction between the shipper and the recipient. And I just don't see it. So this is going to be a problem, and I really I would like to see e-bikes going back to what e-bikes are. No e-bikes should be able to go faster than 28 miles per hour. And of course, if it does, it is a registrable vehicle. So therefore, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. 28 miles an hour on an electrically assisted bicycle will get you a lot of places with a lot less effort than your standard bicycle. So this is not a difficult thing as far as I see to be enforced, but you know, who knows? It all depends on what your local government is going to do and how they're going to enforce it and what happens here. So boy, it's just to me, it's just maddening, but it's what we have and what we're working with. So let me see. I had a piece here, one last piece before I move on here. And it was about the traffic calming, and I can't see where I am doing it. Maybe it's right here. Traffic calming, yes. So Traffic calming is something that we see here in stores at the University of Connecticut. There are islands now that are in the middle of the roads. Those islands do create a vision of a narrower lane, which makes drivers slow down a little bit. That is the concept behind them. It takes the 60 mile an hour ride and hopefully drops it down to a 30 mile an hour road. And, you know, that's that, like I said, that is the concept. That is what we're looking for. Whether it works or not, we shall see in practice. Whether it's enforced is part of that. And I would look for, as soon as these traffic calming projects are put together, I would look for, I keep my eyes open if I was driving a motorized vehicle and make sure that their law enforcement is not going to be pulling you over. Yeah, you're going to get pulled over. I mean, they're going to pay attention to this. They spend a lot of money on these projects, and it is designed around saving lives. And that is probably the most important part of all. We have a university here, the University of Connecticut, which is a very large university. It has lots of students here. And students are getting hit right and left. They're not just getting hit by cars. I'm going to mention this right now. They are also getting hit by the what I consider irresponsible use of e-vehicles on sidewalks. And I have a very strong opinion about this. And I know that there are students out there that refuse to ride on the roads because they feel they're dangerous, but they're a whole lot better to be out on the road than they are to be on a sidewalk. Remember, pedestrian speed if you're on a pedestrian walkway. Simple, seems simple, doesn't it? It's just maddening because I hear people complain about it all the time. There was even an article in the Connecticut in the University of Connecticut Daily Campus about a month ago, and I talked about it on the show about the scooter problem on campus. It's enormous. It's an enormous problem, and it needs to stop. So high traffic areas where zones are where pedestrians, cyclists, and vehicles interact frequently are where they're starting to put in these island type pieces. So you've got an island in the middle of the road, and it narrows the center part of the road. It keeps cars from running into each other because they're going to hit the island before they hit another car. That part's good, but it also gives a perception of a narrower lane, even though the lane really isn't any narrower. But it does require them to stay in their lane, which therefore will create a wider shoulder or a safer shoulder for cyclists to walk to ride their bikes on, and a walkway next to that for pedestrians. Also, when you get to a crosswalk, the crosswalk often has barriers on both sides of it, which at least give a point of, I hate to say this, but escape should someone decide to run through the crosswalk. I've been working at the university campus here for the last week, a little over a week now, with early voting. And so I'm on campus all the time. And I got to tell you, I mean, people don't stop at the crosswalks. And students, you know, they are hesitant to cross at their own crosswalks. And then there's the students that are so involved with their cell phone that they don't even see you when they are using the crosswalk. But it's just the driving behavior in my state is it is not good. It's not good at all, and I would like to see things a little bit better, you know. But you know, this is going to take a rethinking of the education of drivers of automobiles. I was having this conversation yesterday, and because we're not super busy with the voting right now, with some of my poll workers, and they were talking about how, you know, they don't feel safe when they go out on their bikes on the road. And I said, well, here's the thing. I still feel safe, and I still will have a verbal encounter with a driver should that driver do something that is essentially illegal. You know, 3 foot, please. Give me 3 feet. Give me 3 feet. When you get too close, when you get so close, I can slap the side of your car. That's not 3 feet. Trust me. And I am very quick to do that sort of thing. And that usually will pull a driver over. And when it does pull a driver over and they get out of their car because they're really irritated that I touched their car, not to mention the fact that maybe they would have considered they hit me instead of me touching their car. God, it's just awful. Anyway, I have the conversation with them. And I said, well, you know, when I explained to them the 3 foot rule and they didn't know anything about it, and I explained to them that it was, you know, put into effect many years ago, et cetera, et cetera. And it's $100 fine if you get too close and, you know, if you're caught doing it, and, you know, that's a real problem. When I explain all this to them, they say, well, I really didn't know, because I'm pretty diplomatic about how I approach a driver. And they really don't know. And I said, well, when was the last time you took your driver's test? You know, many times it's 20 or 30 years ago, and how would they possibly know? Of course they wouldn't know anything about that. That's kind of the way it is. And so, you know, I don't feel like I can really blame them for not knowing. The problem is education of drivers is just, it's not good. We get our license, we never have to take the test again. And that's a problem. We never are given information in our driver's license renewals or our registration renewals as to what the new rules are on the road or what to look out for. It's just not there. And that is an irresponsibility from the state level way high up and the Department of Motor Vehicles for not issuing out that kind of information. That goes to the Department of Transportation. It needs to get changed. And this is where you get politically active and try to get those changes to take place. Look at this. I am running completely out of time. And so we're going to have to bring this show to an end. Wow, it went by very quickly. There's so much more I will talk about in next week's show because I can see what I missed out on already, and we will come back to it because there's lots of things here that we can talk about, including Rwanda. Yeah, Rwanda. Why would I want to talk about Rwanda? It comes under the bicycle racing thing. There's a huge movement happening in Africa right now. They're real into bike racing. They had the world championships there. It was so cool. But we don't have any time to talk about that. I'm going to tell you that Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is still on. There's still two to go. The UCI bicycle racing calendar is out now if you want to find it online. And so that's really cool. So we have so much more to talk about here, but I'm just going to bring it up with the finishing points. Just remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Oof. Hard to believe, isn't it? Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Park the car or truck for a week or maybe a day. I'll push it to a day first. Use your bike instead. You're going to surprise yourself. You really will. And you know what? Be safe. Be kind. The bike can really save your life. The views expressed in this program do not express the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's off at work today. If you would like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, Spotify, iTunes, and now on my YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week.
Get on your